Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I just go over.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Well, what am I going to do? Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. One, two.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today's verses are from the third canto, chapter 12. Text 2, 3, 4, and 5, 6, and 7. Okay, so, okay, we'll chant this verse and then I'll bring you up to date from your last class to this class. So this is text 2. Okay, good. Sasar jare nada tasmir, tasmishram. Sasar jare nir tasmishram. Sasajagrainda rain. I'm sorry, you have to connect the end there. Sasajagrainda tasmishram. Tamishram. Sasajagrainda tamishram.
Sasajagrainda tamishram.
Ata tamishram adhikrit.
Ata tamishram.
Mahamoham cha moham cha.
Mahamoham cha moham cha.
Tamasa cha gyana vrittaya.
Tamas cha
gyana vrittaya.
Tamas cha
gyana vrittaya. Sasaja renda tamishram. Ata tamishram adhikrit. Mahamoham cha moham cha. Tamas cha gyana vrittaya.
Tamas cha
gyana vrittaya.
Sasaja rendam
tamishram. Ata tamishram adhikrit. Mahamoham cha moham cha.
Tamas cha
gyana
vrittaya.
Please chant, one or two of you, please. Sasanda reina tamishram. Ata tamishram adhikrit. Mahamoham cha moham cha. Tamas cha gyana vrittaya. Some other brave soul, please. Sasanja renda tamishram. Adatta tamishram adhikrit. Mahamoham cha moham cha. Tamas cha gyana vrittaya. So I'll read the translation to this verse and the following verses that we're doing in this section. Oh, actually, even starting with the first text, the translation. Sri Maitreya said, O learned Vidura, so far I have explained to you the glories of the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his feature of Kala. Kala means time. And it, in his feature of Kala. Now you can hear from me about the creation of Brahma, the reservoir of all Vedic knowledge. Today's verse. Brahma first created the nescient engagements, like self-deception, the sense of death, anger after frustration, the sense of false ownership, and the illusory bodily conception or forgetfulness of one's real identity. Text 3. Seeing such a misleading creation as a sinful task, Brahma did not feel much pleasure in his activity, and therefore he purified himself by meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he began another term of creation. Text 4. In the beginning, Brahma created the four great sages named Sanaka, Sananda, Sanatana, and Sanat Kumar. All of them were unwilling to adopt the materialistic activities because they were highly elevated due to their semen's flowing upwards. 5. Brahma spoke to his sons after generating them. My dear sons, he said, now generate progeny. But due to their being attached to Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they aimed at liberation, and therefore they expressed their unwillingness. Text 6. On the refusal of his sons to obey the order of their father, there was much anger generated in the mind of Brahma, which he tried to control and not express. And 7. Although he tried to curb his anger, it came out from between his eyebrows, and a child of mixed blue and red was immediately generated. And I think that's where we stop today, right? To 7? Okay, so that's the summary of our verses that we're going to cover today. This is talking about, this is chapter 12, creation of the Kumaras and Arvids. This is talking about Lord Brahma's creation. What we have in Srimad Bhagavatam sometimes, and particularly here in this story of the creation, we get an overview of the creation, and then we get the specifics of the creation. So what from your verse yesterday, can you just remind me the numbers of yesterday's verse? 3:9. So chapter 9, from chapter 9 up through 10 and 11 and now in 12, what was happening is, you got the description of the personality of Godhead and his greatness, just like we did in our Chatusloki verse the previous week. The Lord said very clearly, before the creation, nothing existed. Only I existed before the creation. So the Supreme Lord, make no mistake when we talk about the Creator, the Lord, the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, he's the Creator of this material world and the spiritual world and all the living entities. And so what's Lord Brahma's position is he's taking the elements that the Lord has created, those ingredients of creation, and Lord Brahma's arranging them like much like an engineer. The ingredients already existed, and Lord Brahma's arranging them. So what's happened since chapter 9 to now, to chapter 12, Lord Brahma took those elements of creation and he organized them. He divided them in a certain way. So he created the distinctions of the upper planetary systems, the middle planetary system, the lower planetary systems. He created the distinctions of higher living entities, medium living entities, and animals. He created the divisions of the different species and the animals that have certain characteristics like this with certain hooves and cloved hooves, they have those certain characters. So there was different organizational things that he created and elements that he created. And the qualification of the living entities, the higher living entities have this qualification. Those in the human platform have this qualification. And why did he do that? It's because there's consciousness, the living entity's consciousness, the desire. There's so many varieties of desire that he created something for everyone to go into according to their desire. According to their desire in this life based on their activities in the previous life. And that's also why that there's so many divisions or gradations of spiritual knowledge also. Because people have different desires. Not everybody just desires to leave the material world and develop their love of God. So people who don't have that desire, they maybe have a lesser desire, maybe to enjoy piously in the material world. So then they're given facility how to do that properly. So there's different gradations of life. There's different desires, and therefore there's different activities that they do and so many things. So here, now, Lord, so that was the overview. We got the overview, how he did all of this and created the all these divisions inside the stem of the lotus flower. So we remember when you first were introduced to Lord Brahma, sitting, taking his birth on the lotus flower, he actually was one of the first emotions that he felt was fear. He was afraid because The lotus flower was swaying back and forth due to the high wind. He was surrounded by darkness. He didn't know who he was. He didn't know what his duty was. He didn't know what was going on. He tried to discover on his own, by his own endeavor, he tried to discover what the source of the lotus was, where it came from. He climbed down, but he couldn't, he climbed down the stem of the lotus flower, but he couldn't discover his identity on his own, which is very significant. You know, so then he heard the syllables ta, pa. He performed hundred years of celestial years of penance. And then he was enlightened by the Supreme Lord. In other words, it's not by our endeavor that we make progress. We have to make our endeavor. This has been stated over and over again in various ways. We have to make our endeavor in spiritual life, but it's not by our endeavor. It's by the mercy of the Lord that Krishna reveals himself. So same with Lord Brahma. So then, after his realization and after the Lord revealed himself and he could actually even see the spiritual world, he could understand his own position, then he knew what to do. Then he knew how to create with the Krishna empowered him. And then the first thing he did was he drank up all the water, all the wind, and all the darkness. And, I can't. But he drank it all up, but it just goes to show you that higher living entities are empowered with higher intelligence, and things are where subtle things can be manipulated subtly by highly elevated personalities. So anyway, so now he's about to start this creational process, even though in these other chapters we got a description of how he created. Now he's about to start. So the first thing what he does is explain in the first verse of today's section, he creates the nescience. He creates activities in nescience. Why does he do that? And Prabhupada explains in the purport. So I'll read a little bit of the purport of verse number 2, purport. We'll do the verse again too. Brahma first created nescient engagements like self-deception, sense of death, anger after frustration, the sense of false ownership, and the illusory bodily conception or forgetfulness of one's real identity. Purport. Before the factual creation of the living entities in different varieties of species, the conditions under which the living being in the material world has to live were created. So before he creates the species, he creates the conditions that they're going to live in. And Prabhupada says, unless a living entity forgets his real identity, it is impossible for him to live in material conditions of life. Therefore, the first condition of material existence is forgetfulness of one's real identity. And by forgetting one's real identity, one is sure to be afraid of death. So then things come, concomitantly after that. If you're forgetting that you're eternal spiritual spark, part and parcel of Krishna, if you actually have a false sense of identity, then you automatically have a fear of death because you're feeling very vulnerable. You're feeling that this somehow is going to end or something. So, and then by making endeavor and being frustrated in the endeavor, naturally anger arises. So we'll read about that in the purport. Therefore, the first condition of material existence is forgetfulness of one's real identity. And by forgetting one's real identity, one is sure to be afraid of death, although a pure living soul is deathless and birthless. This false identification with material nature is the cause of false ownership of things which are offered by the arrangement of superior control. And here, Prabhupada's going to say what the proper use of that false ownership is. It's actually meant to bring us to a higher level of understanding. So he says, all material resources are offered to the living entity for his peaceful living and for the discharge of duties of self-realization in conditional life. But unfortunately, the living entity takes it to the extreme. And Prabhupada says, but due to false identification, the conditioned soul becomes entrapped in the sense of false ownership over the property of the Supreme Lord. It is evident from this verse that Brahma himself is a creation of the Supreme Lord, and the five kinds of neshans, which condition living entities in material existence, they are creations of Brahma. And then Srila Prabhupada, as he often does, and any time there's an opportunity, he likes to smash the impersonalist conception of life. So he takes that opportunity because he's always seeing what a false sense of a false position that is. It is simply ludicrous to think that the living entity to be equal with the Supreme Lord Being, when one can understand that the conditioned souls are under the influence of Brahma's magic wand. Patanjali is one of the six major philosophical paths. He, the propagator of these paths, so Patanjali Yoga. So Patanjali also accepts that there are five kinds of neshans as mentioned herein. So these five kinds of neshan activities, they were created first. Then the bodies of the living entity, and then the living entities from the spiritual world somehow or other come into material existence already bound up by a false sense of identification, a fear of death, forgetfulness of their real position. They're already, just to be here means that's what's happening with the living entity. Of course, there are a few exceptions. Oh, very good. There's a very strong possibility that these five are going to be on your next quiz. When I was going to actually quiz you on them after we do the next verse. And my unhumble, unsolicited opinion is that the next thing should be on too. The four principles of spiritual life or spiritual enlightenment that Lord Lama gives in the next couple of verses. Okay, taking your notes here much more vigorously now, aren't you? Okay. So these neshan activities are created because the living entity coming into the material world, it's called viparyayo smriti. His conception of life is completely reversed. The original position of the living entity is to understand that I am the servant of the Lord, that the Lord is the supreme, I am his servant. But coming into the material worlds means the conception of life is totally reversed. Instead of thinking, I am the servant of the Lord, we're thinking we are the supreme, and if we satisfy our senses, that's how we'll be happy. And that's the symptom of neshans. So, there are other things in this section of verses, and we'll zoom on. Text 3. Lord Brahma, he wasn't very happy after doing that, and it's understandably so. Yes, sir? Yeah, and why is the jail created before the prisoner commits the crime? The jail is created because it's understood that there are going to be some miscreants in society. So it's understood that that if you even want to come here, you're an illusion. So okay, now here's the full-fledged feeling of that illusion. So text 3, seeing such a misleading creation as a sinful task, Brahma did not feel much pleasure in his activity, and therefore he purified himself by meditation on the personality of Godhead, and he began another term of creation. So Prabhupada makes an important point in this purport here. He explains about how the Lord is not partial. Sometimes it appears that the Lord is partial to his devotees, and he's impartial, or he favors his devotees and then he punishes the non-devotees. So isn't that an exhibition of partiality on the Supreme Lord? Can anybody explain this apparent defect in the Lord? What's the explanation? Is he actually wanting to chastise the miscreants because he doesn't like them, because they, you know, for some unfair reason? Gopal, you want to explain that to us?
Well, it's just like a loving parent has to chastise his children. He may reward one and he may chastise another one. And somebody who's seeing this happen might say he's being unfair, but he doesn't know what the actual situation was.
Very nice, thank you. Can you tell me, can somebody tell me, or you tell me, what is the, what's the motivational force? What's the Lord's motivation for chastising someone? Why, what's his motivation? Forget your name. Bart.
What's the Lord's motivation for chastising?
Yes.
Because he wants every living entity to understand its constitutional position and come back to him.
Very good. Very good. And
here, I'll go over here. You hold that.
Yes. And it's also based on the desire. You're correct. Gopal's correct. It's also based on somebody who wants to forget the Lord. The Lord is impartially, he's impartial. He's letting, if they want to forget the Lord, they have the minute independence to do that. So he's fulfilling their desires. He's fulfilling their desire. They can't be happy separate from him. But if they're thinking that they want to be happy separate from him, give them a... If they think they want to be happy separate from him, then he's giving them facility to do that. And someone who's trying to remember him, the Lord is rewarding him with some benediction or whatever based on their desire. But he's not impartial. Naveen?
It's a question.
Yes.
Question is, so when a person surrenders to the Lord and he is called devotee,
Take away all the other bad actually. It was a very nice question. And actually, the Lord is doing that. He is taking away the desires through the process. You didn't get... Okay, so Naveen's question was, well, if somebody's a devotee of the Lord, then why... he's made the decision to surrender to the Lord. So then why doesn't the Lord take away all his other desires that would impede him from being fully surrendered? Is that a good summary of your question? Okay. So it's a nice question. And the answer is that the Lord is actually doing that. He is actually doing that by the process of devotional service. You know, because the process of devotional service is cleansing the heart of all previous desires, all material desires, all lower desires by how? By giving a higher taste, by getting that higher taste. So it's cleansed. Now one might counter say, yes, but that's such a gradual thing. Why can't it happen like right away, instant? Well, it actually, and Srila Prabhupada makes the point, it can happen right away, instant, if your desire is that, is subsequently or proportionately that strong. Usually, because, and it's quite normal, we have desire to surrender to Krishna, and we also have a few other trillion desires, you know, of enjoyment in material world simultaneously. But we try to focus and we try to augment our desire to surrender to Krishna and detach ourselves from our other desires. Now I forgot what I was going to say. Krishna. We have those many desires. Oh, if our desire was, thank you, or if our desire was strong enough, it could happen right away. But because it's not strong enough, so Krishna doesn't force us. Bottom line. He doesn't force someone to love him purely, and he doesn't force somebody away from him. It's our choice. And so we're sitting here, you know, thumping our little fingers on the table thinking, well, when is it going to really happen? I surrendered yesterday or last week or whatever and still look at this. But actually, it's happening quite quickly. It's just our conception of, perception of things that it seems like it's not happening. But Krishna will never force us either to surrender fully, because then it's not love. Then it's not love. And that minute independence that the living entity has, that's what it is. It's our minute independence. So when it comes fully to the point of wanting to surrender to Krishna, then nothing can stop us. And Prabhupada says, if we wanted to surrender, it could take a second. Or it can take many lifetimes. It's our choice. Yes, sir? The batteries seem to always be out on that. Who's in charge? Oh, excuse me.
Out of love, you are saying, oh, Krishna, I love you. I'm surrendering. Now you take care of me in whatever way you want.
Yes, and he is, but we're not accepting that. Oh, whatever way you want that I want, you want. Hare Krishna, welcome. Please come in. No, come in. Come. Don't be shy. Come in, welcome. So, yes, we're surrendering with a certain motivation. We're surrendering with a certain expectation. We're surrendering with a certain, you know, sense of, okay, now I fully surrender to you, and now I want you to take care of me, protect me, and maintain me the way that I'm thinking I should be cared for, maintained, and protected. And Krishna might say, yes, but I have a slightly different idea. And we're thinking, yes, but I want it my way. I'm surrendering to you my way. Okay, let's go on, okay? Bala was saying thanks.
So then, Manaji, is it necessary that one be 100% surrendered to the Lord before one is eligible to go back to the spiritual sky?
Thanks for that question. Is it necessary that one should be 100% surrendered before one's eligible? Yes, it's necessary. But it's not. But it's not what I thought you were going to say. Was, is it necessary to be 100% surrendered before one actually can develop even any progress in bhakti? And actually, we're all mixed. We all have mixed desires, and we come with our mixed desires of material and spiritual enjoyment and gradually cleanse them off. Now, would you like to make a comment? Because
I was just wondering if that was the qualification for becoming free from material existence and going back to Godhead. Was that 100% be surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord? Or is that, you know, or can you be like, say, 95 or 93%?
75. I remember that little exchange reminded me of the lecture that Prabhupada said that one has to be 100% pure. And all the devotees kind of felt a little discouraged, you know. And Prabhupada could see that in their faces, you know. And so then he said, he gave a lesser number, 70%. And then anyone thought, even that. And he said, at least, I don't remember. Do you remember the exact exchange? Yeah, anyway, so the thing is that I'm going to let Kalakant answer that question. Can I have the mic, please? So when in doubt, you pass the question on to the learned devotees.
First of all, if you can find that conversation, it would be very interesting.
Okay, please. I will look it up.
Okay, thank you.
He kept going down, and he got off the Vyasasana, he said, lower, and then he put his hand over the chart, and he said, 75%. But meaning he would make, Srila Prabhupada would make up for the rest. But.
Wow. Well, there are so many individual situations in devotional service. It's mm-hmm. very hard to generalize.
Yes.
We know one thing for sure. If a person is 100% pure, they can go back to Godhead. That we know for sure. But if a person has not come to that stage, then what does it take for the person to continue to endeavor? And this is what concerns me sometimes. I see devotees or hear devotees saying, it just seems impossibly vast, the distance from where I am to where I need to be. So the next part of that chain of thought is, therefore, let me give up devotional service. It's just too hard. So that we can understand is Maya penetrating when we're thinking, oh, it's just too much. Because Krishna accepts us like we are right now. He wants us to be purified, but he accepts us like we are right now. He loves us unconditionally. But we don't have the ability to love ourselves because of our past sinful activities. So if we are unable to forgive ourselves because of our shortcomings, that is a kind of Maya also. And the gopis actually have this discussion in the 10th canto with Krishna. I'm sorry, not the gopis, but Mother Yashoda and the cowherd men were loving Krishna's expansions as their sons and unconditionally. Anyway, I don't want to get into too much elaboration there, but that discussion is there in the 10th canto, that Krishna is the basis of our love. Because Krishna loves us, therefore we can love ourselves. So one of the symptoms of accepting Krishna's love for us is being able to love ourselves. If we condemn ourselves, I can never be 100% pure, then we haven't accepted the fact that Krishna loves us.
Hmm. Very nice. Garrison.
Well, I'm going to take one question or comment from Garrison, and then go out on to our other verses.
How do we understand the conception of surrendering in a moment or really quickly? And or just
The question is how can we understand the process of surrendering at the moment, in comparison to the process of chanting the holy names as the means of surrender for this age? In continuation of the question, if I understand it properly, is that it seems like one has to be practically a madman or a crazy person to be surrendered when you're chanting in kirtan, because you're not really dealing with other people there. You're just surrendering madly dancing. Even in japa. Well, I guess a person can only answer at the level of realization that they're at. So that's what I can give you. Maybe there's a different conception of what surrender means between what you're saying and what I'm understanding surrender to be at this point in my journey. So surrender, what does surrender mean? Surrender means that we're trying to remember the Lord, that we're trying to understand our position as servant of the Lord, that we're not the controller, that He's the controller. Surrender means, it can mean various things at different stages, you know. Surrender doesn't just mean that you have to clean the bathroom, even though you don't feel like it, but it's your duty. I mean, that is a surrender, but there are other levels of surrender also. Anything else you'd like to comment on that one, too? Yeah, so, yeah, as long as they clean the bathroom, then you're a surrendered soul. But I think I'm going to go on because I don't have much more to say about that. But I'm sure many other people will be able to answer your question a lot better. Text 5. Oh, no. We're going on to text 4, okay? Just if you remember the progression of these verses, Lord Brahma first created the neshan activities. Without looking at your notes, can you give me one of the neshan activities? Naveen, fear of death, sarga, frustration after anger, balava saying, self-deception, Derek, forgetfulness, don't forget that one, yes, uh-huh. And that was 4, right? False ownership, thank you. What's your name, is Krishna? Brajahari? Okay, thank you, sorry. Brajahari. Okay, yeah, false ownership. So these neshan activities were created first, then the living entities, then the bodies of the living entities created, then Lord Brahma, he didn't feel happy after that, so he purified himself, and now he begins a new term of creation, which is in text 4. In the beginning, Brahma created 4 great sages named Sanaka, Sananda, Sanatana, and Sanat Kumar.
All of them were unwilling to adopt materialistic activities because they were highly elevated due to their semens flowing upward. So here, in this purport, Prabhupada's going to give an explanation of the four principles of knowledge that Lord Brahma created. So here we'll read this purport. So he created previously the principles of nescience, but now he's creating some principles of knowledge or enlightenment. Although Brahma created the principles of nescience as a matter of necessity for those living entities who were destined to ignorance by the will of the Lord, he was not satisfied in performing such a thankless task. He therefore created four principles of knowledge: Sankhya, or empirical philosophy, for the analytical study of material conditions; Yoga, or mysticism, for liberation of the pure soul from material bondage; Vairagya, acceptance of complete detachment from material enjoyment in life to elevate oneself to the highest spiritual understanding; and Tapas, or the various kinds of voluntary austerities performed for spiritual perfection. Brahma created the four great sages, Sanaka, Sananda, Sanatana, and Sanat, to entrust them with these four principles of spiritual advancement, and they inaugurated their own spiritual party, or Sampradaya, known as the Kumara Sampradaya, or later on as the Nimbarka Sampradaya, for the advancement of bhakti. All of these great sages became great devotees, for without devotional service to the personality of Godhead, one cannot achieve success in any activity of spiritual value. Even in the process of karmakanda, jnanakanda, astanga, yoga, all of those processes of yoga, unless there is some tinge of bhakti, some devotion there, then those participants will not reap the desired result of those activities. So, good. Scroll down there. Keep it there. So can you, Vaibhav, you have a question or comment? Yeah. There's four sampradayas. Nimbarka sampradaya is one of the sampradayas. It is coming from the Kumaras, the four Kumaras. Then there's Brahma Gaudiya Madhava Sampradaya, coming from Lord Brahma. Then there's Shri Sampradaya, from Lakshmiji. And then Rudra, Lord Shiva, coming from Rudra, Rudra Sampradaya coming. These are bona fide processes, bona fide sampradayas. In fact, when you get to visit Mayapur, well, Ankush is going to Mayapur, you just go down the street to the yoga peak, and there's various temples in there. And I'm thinking, is it the yoga peak that's there? It's the next one, isn't it? It's the Bhakti Siddhanta's Mat. Yeah. Then there's one temple there that Lord Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj established, and he has the four sampradayas above the altar in four different directions. And he has little dioramas of the leaders of the sampradayas, and it's really cute to look at. You know, Kumaras are there, and you know, and then so those are the four. Those are authorized. Sometimes we're thinking that our way is the only way. You know. And even ISKCON is the only way. And in, you know, in a certain degree, that's true. But these are four bona fide, authorized, as Prabhupada says, authorized to emanate the process of bhakti, for the advancement of bhakti. Yes, Vaibha. Oh, Ramanuja is Shri. Sorry, thanks. Vishnu Swami is Rudra Sampradaya. Thank you. Okay, so Lord Brahma created these principles of knowledge and then entrusted these four sons to take up these principles of knowledge, and then he asked them to what? Create progeny. So in text 5 he says, Brahma spoke to his sons after generating them. My dear sons, he said, now generate progeny. But due to their being attached to Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they aimed at liberation, and therefore they expressed their unwillingness. So we can understand that in the, like in the Dharma Shastras, in the principles of religion, it's very important to follow the orders of the superior. So Lord Brahma, he's the superior created being. He's entrusted with the task of creation. So he's creating different progeny so they can populate the universe. So the first people that he creates, his first four sons, the Kumaras, and now he's turning to them. Now I want you to propagate and fill the universe with living entities. And they're saying, my dear father, we're not going to do that. So he's a little disturbed by that. But so like I was saying about Dharma Shastras, so following the orders of the superior persons is a very basic principle, very important principles for us to imbibe in our spiritual journey. But we also need to develop a discrimination. So these, although it normally would have been a great offense for under normal circumstances for these children to disobey the orders of their exalted father, actually they are considered great sages and very exalted and praiseworthy for this action. But why? It's because they were firmly convinced and firmly fixed in higher spiritual understanding. So let's look at the example of Lord Ramachandra. Lord Ramachandra, when he got the instruction from his father to now go to the forest, now don't accept the throne, go to the forest for 14 years, Lord Ramachandra immediately, without question, without hesitation, without even a slight flinching, you know, he immediately accepted the order of his father. When Lakshman heard that, he wanted to create some, he wanted to overtake the father, overtake the throne and disobey. Lord Ram wouldn't have any, he wouldn't even listen to it. Bharat wanted to negotiate with Ram. Okay, look, we'll follow the orders of the father. I'll go to the forest. You stay here. Lord said, no, this isn't a process of negotiation. You know, it's a joy to follow the orders of our father. But Lord Ram had his purpose to fulfill. He understood, you know, he was omniscient. You know, he had his purpose to fulfill in that incarnation. In this circumstance, actually we can think of a situation with Yayati. Yayati, when the great King Yayati, due to, let's see how to summarize it in 20 words or less, due to some difficulty, entanglement, when Yayati was approached, he had four sons. When he approached his sons, Yayati had been cursed by Sukracharya to become old, even though he was strong in body and mind and very strong in sexual desires. He was cursed by Sukracharya, now become an old man. And he said, oh, but how can I do this? Blah, blah, blah. I have so many plans. And Sukracharya said, well, if you can exchange your old age with your son, with their youth, then you can counteract it that way. So Yati went to his four sons, one of whom was Yadu. And he went to Yadu. I think Yadu was his eldest son, but I'm not 100% sure. And he said, will you take my old age? Yadu also said no. But why he said no and why he's not considered quote-unquote irreligious, because he understood that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is going to be coming in the near future in my dynasty, in the Yadu dynasty. Therefore, let me perform my duties quickly. So to facilitate that. So he understood a higher purpose. When Yayati went to his other sons and said, will you exchange your youth? Will you give me your youth for my old age? They said no because they didn't want to. They didn't want to be old. And therefore they were considered irreligious and were cursed to be kings of lower living entities and etc. So here again, focusing in on today's verses of the Kumaras, they're refusing the orders of the Father. Why? Because they're fixed. They're not wavering. It's not that they sort of don't feel like maybe we'll be brahmacharis. No, they're totally convinced and fixed on a higher destination, and therefore they're considered highly elevated souls and very great personalities. So what happens to... Also, Prabhupada quotes a very prominent verse from the Bhagavatam in the purport to text 5. Devarshi bhutapta rinam pitrinam nakim karo nayam rini charajam sarvatmanaya sharanam sharanyam gato mukunda parihrityakartam. Anyone who has completely given up all worldly relationships and has taken absolute shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, who gives us salvation, and who alone is fit to be taken shelter of. Anyone who does that is no longer a debtor or servant of anyone, including the demigods and forefathers and others. So oftentimes we take this, in our youthful enthusiasm, we might take these verses out of context and think, yes, that's me. I'm totally surrendered and determined. And when actually it's kind of like a spur of the moment thing. So Prabhupada, we experienced it many times in our movement, in our youthful enthusiasm. We thought, yes, I'm going to renounce the world. It's, you know, I'm 20 years old and I'm going to take sannyas and conquer the world by my prowess in preaching. And very nice. It's a very glorious sentiment and feeling. But oftentimes one is not able to sustain those feelings of renunciation and detachment. So therefore, these verses are given quite clearly that one who has taken absolute shelter and completely given up varieties of worldly relationships, they're the ones who are free from all social and obligations to others. But in the meantime, we are encouraged to follow along in our present social order as we build up our strength in detachment and our build up our bhakti. So text 6, on the refusal of the sons to obey the order of their father, there was much anger generated in the mind of Brahma, which he tried to control and not express. So Lord Brahma, what's his position? He's the superintendent, the Lord, the master of the mode of passion. So it's quite, Prabhupada doesn't criticize him at all for being overcome by a passionate nature in the purport, Prabhupada says. Brahma is the director in charge of the mode of passion of material nature. Therefore, it was natural for him to become angry on the refusal of his sons to obey his order. So sometimes people refer to these instances of Brahma and in kind of a way that finds a fault, that he's not so advanced after all, or he's imperfect, or he's, you know, so many things. But often, one time in one morning walk in Vrindavan, one devotee was making a critique of Lord Brahma's activities. And there, one famous incident when Lord Brahma becomes overcome by attraction for his daughter, because he created his daughter, and he became overwhelmed by attraction for his daughter, and he began to follow her for sexual union. But the thing is that he actually took on a different body to do that. It wasn't his Lord Brahma body. He took on another body to do that. And what ensued from that is when different people saw Lord Brahma act in this way, and they criticized him in their minds, they were cursed. They had a fall down because they were seeing a fault in a greatly advanced living entity. It's a very difficult concept for us who are conditioned and struggling for, you know, making perfection in attaining perfection. It's a hard concept of becoming free from criticizing. It's a hard thing to actually really understand what that means. So Prabhupada would often say, how we can, in our fallen position, judge somebody who's such a great controller, who's so highly exalted. How can we do that from our position of contamination? And it's a very, very dangerous thing to do. So those living entities, the sons of Brahma that criticized him, they actually were, it's a long story, but they were actually cursed to, eventually they actually were the sons of Devaki that were killed in the womb by Kamsa before Krishna's birth. It's part of their string of births that they took because they had offended a great soul. So even sometimes when you're reading probably in Chaitanya Charitamrita or maybe Chaitanya Bhagavat and you're hearing the activities of Lord Chaitanya and you hear some of the unusual activities of Lord Nityananda, a great soul, sometimes it's hard to understand how he can be a great soul and yet walk around naked often, or, you know, go here or go there or do such unusual activities. And so one time a devotee, an aspiring devotee of Lord Chaitanya, approached Lord Chaitanya and asked him, please clarify this. Lord Nityananda seems like such a great soul, but I don't see him strictly following the rules of social etiquette. You know, even the rules of the sannyasi ashram, he's got silken clothes and a big wrapper sometimes, and sometimes he doesn't have any clothes, and I can't figure it out, and it's like hard to control my mind. I can relate to that, not being able to control the mind type of thing. So Lord Chaitanya recounted this story of the of Lord Brahma. So these great controllers, they're so, so powerful. Sometimes you might pick out that incidence, but like for example, Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, he said he might act in unusual ways, but he has the ability and the potency to drink a whole ocean of poison. Said, so don't imitate Lord Shiva in his smoking of ganja unless you can drink that whole ocean of poison. One drop of that poison, you'd be dead. And he drank the whole ocean so and affected him that his neck became blue, nilakant. He had a blue line on his neck, which was considered his ornament out of compassion for all living entities. So it's a thing for us to try to actually see. So Lord Brahma, it appeared that he was overcome by what? Passion and ignorance. And the colors of passion and ignorance are blue and red. So a child came from, as he tried to control his anger, he at least didn't react angrily, but still a child came from between his eyebrows. And who is that child? Shiva, Rudra, the Rudra principles came in a hue of mixed blue and red. He didn't express his anger, but he, in his attempt to control his anger escaped in that form. And you'll learn in the next, I don't know how, anyway, you'll learn a little bit about what Lord Shiva, Lord Rudra, the Rudra principle, what he did after his appearance there, created a little bit of a disturbance there because of his angry mood. So, those are some of the thoughts on these great, great span of verses from chapter to chapter to chapter. So, if you have any easy question, you can ask me. And if you have any hard questions, we'll defer it to other more learned devotees or comments. Okay. Oh. Because I have some questions for you if you don't. Okay, Garrison first. And Derek. Well, so Garrison's asking, how can we understand that Lord Brahma had a fall down that happened so, so long ago, and yet again he comes as Haridas Thakur and has no difficulty or exhibits no difficulty? So we have to understand what the purpose of the Lord is. The answer to that is deep, but it can be summarized in the form of Leela. It's the pastimes of the Lord, and what we should try to see, what are we supposed to learn from these activities? So we should actually have no doubt that Lord Brahma is a highly elevated, exalted personality, or else how would he have gotten to that position to begin with? How would he even associate with the Lord in Goloka Vrindavan and even be able to think that he can steal the calves? He wouldn't be able to do that unless Krishna allowed him there, unless he was qualified to enter. No one can enter Goloka. No one can enter for the pastimes of the Lord without that qualification of purity and love. So he might be exhibiting a little bit of this nature just to show us what the proper attitude is if one has some difficulty. So what was Lord Brahma's response to this difficulty? After he created the Neshan activities, he purified himself. He didn't give up. He didn't stop. He didn't continue on with quote-unquote degraded activities. He purified himself. So there's a lesson we should take from that. Not the lesson that, okay, it's okay to have a fall down. That's not the lesson. The lesson is what should our attitude be? When Lord Brahma, after he stole the cows for just a moment, he just stole them and hid them for a moment, when he came back, according to the time that had elapsed here, was a year later, then he offered these very beautiful, the prayers of Lord Brahma after begging apologies from Krishna are very beautiful and very instructive for us. And he says there in those prayers, some of the prayers he says, someone may say, I know everything about Krishna, but I'm not going to say that. Now I've learned that Krishna's potency is unlimited and I'm just a tiny little spark. So then when we see his activities of Haridas Thakur, then we can see this is actual his real nature of complete, utter humility and service to the Lord. Derek, did you have a question also or comment? Bart had one? Okay. Okay. Okay, so Naveen has one. Time is always relative to the body that you're in. Like we're living, 100 years supposedly, and the ant is living 100 years. But his is just 1 hour or 2 hours or a couple of days, but he's feeling like it's 100 years of his time. I think we're getting the signal to say our favorite prayer, and then we'll continue. Okay? Sarida vijaja jotendra jaika jive pere visai sagre karma je jivayati lovamoya sudurmati tape jaka kotina samsare Krishna Bhadajoyamoy, Kari Bhada Jivajoy, Swapasar and Devabhan, Sayanam Rikha, Radha Krishna, Gunagal, Premida, Gaur, Jachanyamita, Janimani Tarim, Shukha,
just a quick announcement. I'd like to welcome and thank Shailendra and Nilani. You brought prasad this morning for everybody. I understand that you recently acquired the deities from the Alachua temple at the gift shop, right? No, did I misunderstand? You brought them. In any case, you're new to Krishna consciousness. We welcome you. Thank you very much for coming. Hare bol.
Okay, so while you're taking your prasadam, here's my questions for you. What were those Neshan activities that Lord Brahma created? Let's start on this side of the room. One of them, fear of death. False ownership. Dipti, what was that? Frustration after, anger after frustration. Self-deception. 1, 2, 3, 4. And someone else? Identify with the body. Identification with the body. Okay, now what about the four principles of knowledge that Lord Brahma created? Four things of knowledge, four divisions of knowledge. One of them was Sankhya. And what's the definition or explanation of Sankhya? Analytical knowledge for understanding the material world. Mr. Yogi Tony, do you remember any? That was one of his names. That was one of the four Kumaras' names. It was a principle of knowledge. I'll give you a hint. It wasn't a very good hymn. Tapa, austerity. Austerity. Another one. Vairagya. Vairagya. What's the translation of Vairagya, Derek? Detachment from material activities. Right. So Vairagya, Sankhya. Oh, then there was Yoga. The mystical process for understanding the Absolute Truth. Okay. Yep. Now you can take prasadam. Thank you. Hare Krishna.